This episode of the Infamous Podcast is brought to you by the Flying Pork Apparel Company.
The Flying Pork Apparel Company is an awfully long name to fit into a 15-second ad. We're most likely going to have to cut it short, but our designer tees and customer services are like way long on quality. Visit flyingporkapparel.com and shirt yourself, folks. Thank you.
Hey, welcome back to the Infamous Podcast. This is episode 173. I'm Brian.
This is Johnny.
And this is Comics Worth Reading. All right, so on today's show, we are going to... This is one of our new things that we were came up with when we were on our break. What we're going to do is we each have a comic series, essentially. Mini series, maxi series, regular series,
single issue.
That we deem is something that is worth reading. And we're each going to talk about it and give the pros and cons on why you should read it and tell you all about it.
I don't have any cons on mine.
Well, I mean, there's cons to everything.
I don't think so with mine.
Cons!
Oh, my God.
Anyway, all right, so what's your book?
Why don't you tell me what your book is?
My book for Volume 1 of Comics Worth Reading is Rising Stars.
Okay. And why?
Well, one, I love it. It's fun to read. So, but honestly, so there's a couple reasons. One, there's a little nostalgia factor to it because I had taken a brief break from comics while I was in college when I was poor.
Yeah.
And it was either buy comics or drink beer. So, okay. You know, beer won out. And when I graduated and I started working again, or working for the first time, I guess, technically, when I got back into comics, this was one of the first books I got. It was recommended from my friend Dave Powell.
Okay.
And he's like, you know, you're really going to like this book. It's done by J. Michael Straczynski from Babylon 5 and many, many other awesome things.
He-Man, Captain Power.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, anyway.
Amazing Spider-Man.
Yep. Because
he did write that before.
This was pre-Amazing Spider-Man. Yeah. So, this ended, and then he did Amazing.
Because he proved that he could write a comic book.
Yeah, kind of. So this
he just couldn't end a comic book.
Well, so there's I'll get into that. But what I really liked about this, let's see, issues 22, 23, and 4. Anyway, so what I liked about this is it's a world where superheroes never existed,
mm-hmm.
and it all starts in the fictitious town of Peterson, Illinois, and there's a mysterious light flash, if you will. That happens across the sky, and it turns out that the 113 kids in that city that were in utero at the time,
mm-hmm.
When they turn 6, all start manifesting powers.
So you know that that's kind of inspired by the Midwich Cuckoos, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, this is by
Village
no
of the
means,
Damned. Right. Some people know it as the Village of the Damned. The Midwich Cuckoos was the original story.
So, like, I'm not saying that this is like an
I just
original
thought, I think
story.
It's funny that nobody's ever really acknowledged that.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Like, that's awesome. And so, what I liked about it is it was the whole, like, especially the first like 8 issues or so, because it's all about these kids with powers and how do the adults react to it? And then how do the kids then react to what the adults are doing?
Mm-hmm.
And because it's a world with no superheroes, these kids get locked down, put into a camp.
Yeah.
Not a concentration camp, but a
like
camp.
An internment camp.
They were definitely interned because they couldn't leave,
yeah.
But they were monitored and like their powers were tested.
Well, it's what would you do if a bunch of people showed up with superpowers?
And I think I feel like Straczynski did a really good job of capturing the animosity that the regular kids had with the specials,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time the animosity that the specials' parents had with the U.S. government really early on.
Yeah.
And so it's a. You know, and it's I struggle to think back to like 2000 and what was going on. Like, you know, 9/11 happened and that sort
well, right.
of thing. But this book started before 9/11.
This the story kind of acknowledges concentration camps and internment camps and what do you do with powered people.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of Squadron Supreme
yeah.
in there. There's a little bit of Midwich Cuckoos in there with the inspiration. And I mean, nobody's ever acknowledged that stuff, and he's never said anything about it. He kind of doesn't do interviews that much anyways. But, I mean...
Hey, Joe, if you're listening.
Yeah?
Come talk about it.
We'll talk about everything.
Heck yeah.
But so. It was an inspired story for the fact that, like, you know, there was stuff that was going on in the 90s. I mean, the Trade Center had been bombed once already.
Right.
And that, I mean, you know... And just the idea of what happens when 113 kids have superpowers and the government treats them
like criminals,
like toys. Pretty much.
That's later. Like, you know,
well, they start by treating them like criminals, but then they start manipulating things and making some of them superheroes and some supervillains.
Right. And part of that was, you know, when they started the whole villain thing, the one character, Matthew Bright, his dad's a police officer.
Yeah.
He goes to court immediately and is like, these are American children. They're minors. You can't do this. And so then instead of it being a mandatory thing, it becomes voluntary.
Right.
But the parents don't know how to raise these kids. And, you know, you have characters like Jerry and Lee who are both pyrokinetic.
Right.
And
yeah, I don't remember many of the characters' names.
They're
at this point. That's 20 years ago.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
2005 is when it ended.
Right.
And so, you know, you have these kids who are like, they're just two examples, but their powers are pyrokinetic and they're manipulated or manifested subconsciously.
Well, yeah.
So when they sleep, they have to be trained how to like psychically use their powers.
Right.
And it was really cool. One, the way they took their time to get there. And two, the way they showed the journey to what you're talking about, where, you know, you had Jason Miller Flag, which became known as Patriot, was essentially the strongest.
Yeah.
And so he was forced into that like Superman role.
He became the Superman.
And then you had Jerry Montrose, who was Pyre, who, you know, because fire is evil and because the one character, Lee Jackson, who was the other Pyro, had issues and, you know, scared the hell out of everybody because he burned down an apartment complex. Or a hotel, sorry, and killed everyone in it because he couldn't control his powers. And, you know, he ran and they didn't know why he ran or his family ran. But it turned out that the camp that they had these kids at, Lee had gone there the summer before his powers manifested. And one of the camp counselors had molested him.
Oh,
and okay, then the camp counselor was there and Lee burned him alive and then took off.
Yeah.
So. You know, it was a really interesting thing from that first 6 to 8 issues where it's, you know, in utero to college to, you know, just after college for a lot of them. I will say the power sets for the kids were really cool. Like you had Chandra, who she was the most beautiful woman in the world to whoever looked at her. And so it meant like. She didn't change shape or anything.
Yeah.
She manipulated your perception of her.
Yeah.
Which was really kind of cool. So no one ever actually knew what she looked like except for, you know, one person who loved her for her. You had Matthew Bright, who I mentioned before, who they always refer to as he was the best of us all, who all he wanted to do was help people. And he ran away and became a police officer. And then he was trying to get people out of a drug den in New York City, and the building was about to collapse, and it started to collapse, and he holds it up.
Yeah.
And, you know, the NYPD, and this issue came out post 9/11, the NYPD rally around him, and the mayor's office rallies around him, and they give him a badge, and they make him a special officer, where he's a duly appointed officer of the courts.
Yeah.
That he's the first special who actually has the ability to do things. You have Joshua Kane, who's Sanctuary, who his dad is a minister and views these gifts as a blessing from God, and manipulates Joshua into becoming a televangelist essentially, and you know, having a mega church, and you know, Joshua's a transvestite, and you know, he has to hide that part of himself, and you know, they think his power is just to, you know, shoot off pretty lights, kind of like Jubilee. And it turns out he's much more powerful than people think. And, you know, the thing is their powers. Oh, and then you have Randy Fisk, who's Raven Shadow, which is their Batman.
Batman, yeah.
And, you know, he makes no bones about being Batman. He has the Raven Cave or right. the Shadow Cave or whatever he calls it. So the neat thing about their power is because Jason is backed by a corporation and they monitor everything he does, and Randy is super wealthy because he's a special and he's an artist and people like to see the world through his eyes. These two are closely monitored with what they can do and what they can't do. And both Nexus Corp and Randy figure out roughly the same time that their powers are going away because it's just an energy and it's the simple laws of physics. As they use, whenever they use their powers, they siphon off a little bit of it.
Yeah.
It can't be destroyed. It just becomes something
disperses.
Else. And so then one of the specials dies. And when that special dies, Jason and Randy both realize, wait a second, not only have I stopped losing strength and speed and
right.
and invulnerability, but now I've gained on what it is. And so they figure out, oh, holy crap, the power is shared. So when one of us dies, that residual power goes to everybody else. And so this is where the mystery of it starts, where someone starts killing off the perceived low powered specials.
Yeah.
And, you know, they do a really good job of like, who could it be? Who is it? What's going on? And, it isn't until the end of the first, you know, trade that
first
you
arc,
find out.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first arc,
the whole thing. I remember when he was doing the first arc was he said it was planned as a 3-arc story
right.
at 24 issues,
24 issues.
Right.
Yeah. So,
so it was split into 8-issue arcs. And all hell breaks loose at the end of the first arc.
Right.
Yeah.
And so all hell actually breaks loose as the specials are being, you know, killed and rounded up. And Jason and Joshua and his dad and Jerry all team up and go to the government and say, oh, John Simon, Poet, and Raven Shadow and Chandra and all these other specials are colluding to overthrow the U.S. government, which was a lie and a fabrication. But because Joshua said, yeah, this is what happened, the U.S. Senate says, all right, you guys are now all now deputies.
Are you not spoiling stuff?
I don't want to spoil too
okay.
much. Like, because
right.
I think they're, because of the
mystery. Well, you just haven't mentioned somebody that is a major character.
Who did I mention?
Critical Mass.
Well, I haven't gone to her yet. So
if
like
you got to the murders, you're to
well,
her.
So, but she doesn't.
She manipulated.
So
it
I
all.
Was gonna. Yeah. So I mean.
Yeah.
It. But you. We don't find out that she's manipulated at all until all hell breaks loose, and all the specials are in that compound in or not all, but the ones who answered the call.
Yeah.
Go to this compound in Colorado, and the government shows up, and it's a great few panels leading up to the. To the whole scene, because you have a soldier like, I hear one can burn you just by looking at you. And, you know, they totally don't understand these people and the nature of their powers, what their powers are, or the fact that these are just ordinary people who were given powers that they didn't ask for.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to lead ordinary lives.
Yeah.
And so
or most of them,
most
yeah.
of them.
Yeah.
You're right. So that this is where there's a couple characters who they think do not have powers, that they were right in the middle of everything.
Right.
And one of these characters is Stephanie Moss. And so when they round them up, she gets tossed into a cell with Doc Wells, who is their guardian, essentially.
Yeah.
Who was the one who was set to study them and come up with ways to kill them.
Right.
If necessary. And so as this is happening and more specials are dying off, Stephanie's starting to change, and not just mentally, but like her physical appearance changes. Because Stephanie was another one who was abused as a child
by her father. Right.
And she created a second personality,
which does happen.
Well, we talked about it in Glass last week.
Yeah.
Which was funny because I was reading this right before I went to see Glass.
Yeah.
And so Critical Mass has the powers, And what she has the ability to do is control the other specials.
Yeah.
And she can kind of incept them pre-inception.
Right.
And get them to do what they want. And it's a great sequence when Doc Wells realizes what's happening too late.
Yeah.
And then you have Matthew showing up in Colorado. And this was probably my favorite part of the whole first arc, is Matthew Bright shows up and Poet is there, and you know, John just comes out and he's like the great protector, and nobody knows what his powers actually are at this point. They think he can just manipulate recordings and electricity so he can't be seen by cameras and things like that. And it's so funny because Matthew, who is one of the strongest, looks at him, he's like, you know, your funny little tricks aren't gonna work, John. I'm just gonna fly in and grab you. And the next thing you know, Matthew Bright is beaten within an inch of his life.
Yeah.
Because John is the most powerful. He's the one who's the failsafe.
Right.
Who can take any one of them out. And so he then, you know, they fight it out and more specials die. And then there's a tipping point where there becomes no low powered specials.
Right.
The remaining specials take in the power and they are all high level. And that's how the first arc ends, with the good ones flying for freedom, for safety.
Getting
and
safe, yeah. The ones to save themselves.
The ones that Critical has coming in and, you know, starting to do bad things.
Well, yeah, Critical Mass takes over
Chicago.
The minds of a lot of people.
But then they fly
and
into Chicago.
That's like the end of that story, is you go into Chicago and then it's 10 years later.
Yeah, so the second arc is 10 years later. And they did a really interesting thing with that first article or first issue coming back, is it was essentially a newspaper magazine.
Yeah.
And it was a story about how over the last 10 years, what has happened in the world, and what have the specials done to the world, to Chicago, more to the point, and what needed to be done. And it calls them a series of missed opportunities and things like that. And so, you know, the specials who were not a part of what was going on with Critical Mass, took off for Europe, took off for other places, just kind of faded back into the world because Randy had so much money, Raven Shadow had so much money that he set them all up with new identities and bank accounts and everything that you would possibly need to, you know.
Yeah, they literally go into hiding.
To go into hiding. Because that was the other really cool thing, is it wasn't like mutants where you had certain mutants who were a different look, right? Who didn't look human or you know, really stood out. They were just regular people who literally could fade into the crowd.
Yeah.
It was a really cool way to start off the second part of this story. Some notable things happen is we meet a character named Kathy Holmes, who she's another one who was born right in the middle of all the specials.
Right.
And she didn't have any powers. And the reason she didn't have any powers is because she had never encountered a situation to where her powers would manifest.
Yeah, right.
And it was really funny when she was talking about it, how like, oh, well, one of us would fly, so everyone would jump off the roof, or one of us would be super strong, or so we would try and lift something way too heavy. And so she was talking about how it's like, okay, there were just certain triggers that happened. And,
sure.
You know, even though it happened and I was in the middle of it, I just didn't take.
Yeah.
Is actually the phrase Michael Joe uses there. And she became their chronicler. She like almost like a watcher.
Yeah.
You know, she was she chronicled their lives and who they were and where they went and what they were doing. And it turned out she had probably one of the most one of the coolest powers of anybody. She could return life. She could raise the dead.
Yeah, like anybody
the recently
who died recently. Yeah, I was gonna say.
And so she finds this out at the end of the first arc, and in this point, Critical Mass has found out and has kidnapped her.
Yeah.
And is essentially taking pieces of animals from the zoo and people and other things and having her reanimate it. which is kind of gross and horrible. And,
yeah.
You know,
A perfect situation for critical mass.
Exactly. And I really liked the point where she was telling her to reanimate it. And she's like, I can make it a rat, bat, cat, Kathy's left leg, you know, like, you know, she's like,
right.
All you need is a hand.
Yeah.
You don't need a whole body. And I can use pieces of you in the creatures that you create.
Right.
And it was you really understood. How
Mass was really bad.
How crazy this character was.
Yeah.
And I think had this book been, it was popular at the time.
Yeah.
I don't think it didn't break any records or anything like that.
I mean, it was a good seller. I remember.
It was.
Like the first two arcs were really good.
Yeah.
Sellers. And then that last arc kind of just petered off.
It's because there was such a long point in between the end of the second arc and the beginning of the third arc as far as publishing goes.
Yeah.
And then there was a whole bunch of contractual stuff between Top Cow and Joe. And, you know, it's like, I think he wanted to finish it a different way. And
Joe got a little slow.
Well, there was that, too.
Yeah.
So,
a lot of the stuff that you get now where writers are like six issues ahead.
Yeah.
Is because of stuff that happened in the late 90s and early 2000s.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Like with Image and with Top Cow and with. You know, Marvel and DC all had that problem.
Yeah,
they just had books that
did not ship on time ever.
Yeah,
So,
and that's pretty much like why the last arc got lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
Really, because like I didn't like the last three issues. I didn't know had come out until like 6 months after they had been out.
Right, and I think we were talking about it, and you were like, "Wait, those came out?"
Yeah,
because I had them, and I think,
and then I read it, and I was just like, "Well, that was."
You're
kind
like,
of,
"Why did I do that?" Again, come
well,
on.
it's that thing where, knowing Straczynski from Babylon 5 and Babylon 5 had having a decent ending, like when Babylon 5 was on, they pretty much canceled it at season 4, so it had an ending,
right?
And then TNT picked it up, and they brought it back for a fifth season,
right?
But it still had an ending,
right?
Because that season 4 ending was just tacked on
to
that's how the story ends.
Right.
There are, you know, stuff left untold, which we ended up with many series from Rising Stars because of that.
Right.
So, I mean, but the thing was, is he wrote all that. I think he wrote all but maybe three episodes on his own.
Yeah.
And it's like when you have one good ending, you're thinking like, oh, you can end stories good.
Yeah.
Not so much.
We all thought that after Green Lantern Rebirth and War of the Battle of the Light one.
Yeah.
The Sinestro Corps War.
Yeah.
So
it's one of those things where sometimes writers get themselves too trapped in their own stories. And the idea of this story was cool. The ending was just bleh. But like what their idea of going into the ending of making things like
the
specials
ending,
were there for a reason. Yep. They were brought there to make things better in the world.
Right. To change the world.
Yeah.
And
to change the world to a positive.
The idea of the ending is good.
Yeah.
The execution of the ending
just didn't do it for me.
It just missed the mark.
Yeah.
And so, but that being said, like reading the Rising Stars main series.
Yeah.
I don't think I've
read any of the mini series stuff.
So the minis, there were three spinoffs. There was Bright. There was Voices of the Dead, which was all about Lionel.
Yeah.
And then there's Untouchable, which was Laurel Darkhaven, who was.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
She was the one who changed the.
I think the only one of those three I read was Bright.
Yeah, and they were.
And that's only because Bright came out during the actual like hot point of that story.
Mm-hmm.
So you know.
So they were all written by Fiona Avery.
Yeah.
And Dan Jurgens did the pencils for Bright.
And Fiona Avery became a writing partner of his because they were writing Babylon 5 novels together. Or she was writing Babylon 5 novels and that he had written outlines for.
There's a few novelizations of this as well.
Are there?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and then
that's interesting.
Yeah. So on Voice of the Dead, Staz Johnson and Al Rio did the pencils, and on Untouchable it was Brent Anderson. So just to give those guys credit.
Yeah.
And Fiona as well.
Yeah, anyway. The main story had three different artists.
Yeah.
for each of the three
for
arcs.
Each of, and yeah. You know, they did a good job like staying close to the characters and who they were.
Well, it was a good idea to do that too, because it had jumped 10 years
yeah.
at the end of every arc.
Right.
So
they had to age them up.
Yeah, they had to age them.
So I don't want to spoil this, and I'm just going to talk a little bit more about it, cuz I've been talking for half hour already. Oh my god. So the whole Battle of Chicago thing
yeah.
was really, 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 really well done.
Yeah.
You got to see the world building that had happened in the first arc paid off, and you got to see power sets that you don't normally see in superhero comics.
Right.
And you got to see all out superhero battles before it was the cool thing to have superheroes fight each other.
Yeah.
And at the same time, the people who were fighting for Critical were not fighting because they wanted to.
They were controlled.
They were being controlled.
Right.
And at the end of this arc, you had, you know, Sanctuary Joshua, he dies.
Yeah.
By enveloping a nuclear explosion.
Mm-hmm.
Which was really, really cool. And one of the neat things about him is while he went up in power like everybody else, he never became invulnerable.
Right.
Because he didn't think he deserved it for what he had done lying to
right.
to kind
being
of kick
a televangelist.
Off this silver. Well, just the lying in general for his whole life about right. who and what he is, and then lying to kick off this special civil war.
Right.
And they never explicitly say if his powers went back into everybody or if he used all of his power up
to just
to
save
destable
everybody
the
else.
Nuclear.
Yeah.
But it was at that point where John and the rest of them are like, we have to do this. Like, the world gave us a control center. The world gave us ground resources.
Yeah.
It gave us air power. It gave us all these different things that we can do. And we didn't listen. And now it's talking to us. And because I'm the single most powerful one of us, and I'm actually the one who controls the force, the power, not the force. This is not the universe you're looking
right.
for. Because he's the one who controls the power, because it flows through him
right.
and around him, kind of like the force.
Are you saying that this is kind of like Star Wars?
Is this a Star Wars spinoff? Because the force goes from planet to
well.
Anyway, no, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The second arc is literally, in my opinion, one of the best story arcs ever.
Well, it's
in
probably
comics.
The best part of this whole series.
It's the best part of the series, but I think it's the best, one of the best story arcs in
I mean,
all of comics.
He can write really good villains.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Critical Mass is a really good villain.
She's amazing.
She gets her comeuppance at the end of this story. That's like, you know, one of the best ways to do it, too.
And I don't want to spoil how
that
happened because it was so cool.
No. It was one of those things where it's like, when's this going to happen?
Right.
Because when you're reading it, you're like, you know that it's going to happen.
Right.
But you're like, when mm-hmm. is just the thing. So, yeah, that was cool. And, you know, then there's the third arc.
Yeah. So the third arc started strong.
It started.
And it was around the fifth or sixth issue where he started having problems with the publishers and getting things in on time.
How are we going to end this?
But well, I think he had an idea for how he was going to end it.
Maybe.
And I don't think this was his original plan.
I don't know.
I will say that the ending is pseudo satisfying because of how it ends.
Yeah.
But how we ended up having to get there.
Yeah.
Was kind of like, what are you doing?
Well, and then it makes you question like what happened before this story because of the beginning with their life.
Right. Who wrote this?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, no, I think this is a great comic. It's 24 issues. And then there's, you know, 3 5 issue spinoffs, or 5 6 and three. Sorry.
Yeah.
Three. So 3 6 and 5. So Bright is 3, Voices of Dead is 6, and Untouchable is 5.
They've all been publishing trades that are probably out of print at this point.
If you go to our website,
they all on Comixology?
They are, and they're all on Comixology Unlimited. So I'm going to do a shameless plug. And if you go to infamouspodcast.com/comixology, you can get 30 free days of Comixology Unlimited, and you can knock this entire compendium out in 2 days with no problem. It's such a fast read. The art is hit or miss on this series.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's fantastic, and other times it's like, is that Matthew Bright or is that Gumby?
Yeah.
So, and part of it is some of the costume design.
I just don't remember the art that well. I just remember the story.
I mean, I reread it recently.
You just read it, yeah.
And some of the character like costume design does not understand the anatomy of the human body, because it's like just a jumpsuit. There's nothing like breaking it up. So there's no waist. So when you're drawing it, it's just like a stretched out piece of taffy with abs, you know? So, or the hands are really small and the, like, you know, but goddamn, they could draw feet.
It's a reverse Rob Liefeld problem.
Anywho.
No hands, but we've got feet.
No hands, but we got feet. But yeah, so this is my book. It's one of my favorites when I travel. Before Comixology became a thing, I would bring all three trades with me on the plane and read it.
Didn't
most
you ever
times
get, like, the one where they published all of them in one book?
Well, I had it before that.
Oh, okay.
So, dude, I bought,
I know, like, they did that.
I have all the individual issues, first print. I have all three first print trades.
Yeah.
And then I bought the compendium on Comixology when it was on sale one time for
$9. Oh, okay.
So I was like, hell yeah, man. So yeah, my book is Rising Stars, and it's worth reading.
Okay.
Your turn.
My book comes from the same era. My book is a miniseries called Kingdom Come.
Damn it, Johnny. You stole one of my books.
This is one of my books for sure.
This is definitely one of your books.
This is one that I push on people who don't read comic books. Like, if you want to read a really cool story, read Kingdom Come.
Well, because when I had come back to comics at Jeff's, you were the one who, because I think it had just come out on trade.
Yeah.
And you were like,
would have been around that time.
You were like, Brian, you need to read this. And I was like, Johnny, I absolutely need to read that after looking at the cover art.
Well, yeah. And it was one of those things where this was pretty much DC's answer to Marvel's.
Yeah.
Which is celebrating its anniversary this year.
Yep.
Mark Waid and Alex Ross worked on this book. And I don't think there's any cons to this book. Maybe the sequel that I don't even count.
I don't count the sequel as part of this.
Yeah,
I
don't either.
The one... Yeah. I think this book drags a little bit in the middle.
See, I don't think so.
And it's partially because... It's intentional.
Yeah.
It's dragging because it's setting up the end game of the story.
Right.
No Marvel pun intended.
But I don't think there's any con to that. Really.
But there's not. But as you're reading it, and I think if I would have read this as individual issues, I would have gotten to the part where, like, they first started rounding up people.
Yeah.
And maybe tapped out.
See, and that was the thing, is, like, reading this as individual issues, I was like, what's happening next?
Yeah.
It's like, literally, Mark Waid can write books.
Yeah.
And Alex Ross and him working on this book, because it was Alex Ross's idea.
Right.
They had it down to, like, when there's an ending to an issue, you're like, whoa, wait, what's happening?
Hold on, what?
Billy? Because Superman shows up at the end of the first issue.
Right.
Like, Superman's not there. It's Kal-El or Clark.
Clark.
Yeah. I mean, and he's living on a farm in the Fortress of Solitude.
Mm-hmm.
And because bad things had happened to him.
To him in particular.
Well, yeah, because this story takes place in the not-so-distant future. It's considered one of the Elseworlds books.
Mm-hmm. Yet some of it has bled back into main continuity.
Some of it did bleed into main continuity because it was popular. But, you know, even that, I'm kind of like, whatever. Things aren't going right in the world. Mm-hmm. The children and grandchildren of the superheroes we know from present day, Superman, Batman, all those, are running amok throughout the world, doing bad things. And an incident happens in Kansas. Mm-hmm. And one of them gets killed and literally destroys the entire food supply for the United States, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And Wonder Woman goes to Clark and tells him, look, this is what's going on. We need you.
Yeah.
And Clark, because of the bad things that happened, and I don't want to spoil much of this either,
right.
because of the bad things that happened to Clark, he doesn't want anything to do with the world anymore.
Right.
And that, and it mainly stems from an encounter with a superhero that is running around now that is pretty much the Superman named Magog. And something that happens between them.
Yeah. And
he gave up. Superman gave up on the world.
He did. He gave up on the world in like in a believable way.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not like the Dark Knight trilogy where Batman just gives up every movie at the end of every movie because I just can't even.
And the surprising thing in this story is Batman did not give up. No, Batman never, has ever. Still been fighting the fight, even though most of his enemies found out who he was.
Yep.
He's living in the cave now. Mm-hmm. He has allies and he's been doing some stuff to build an army because he can see what's coming.
Right. And he has robots.
Right.
Lots of robots.
Yeah, the robots. But the story is told from the point of view of a regular person in the DC universe, mm-hmm. a pastor named Norman McKay. The Spectre comes to use him as a witness to see the end because Revelations is happening.
With the chrome all shiny and new.
Yeah. Norman McKay was a friend of Wesley Dodds, who was the Sandman, the original superhero Sandman.
Right.
And he pretty much passed on his visions to Norman when he passed away.
Yeah, dick move.
Well, you know, I get to see the end of the world. So Norman is literally like a shadow following the Spectre around, watching all this stuff happen. There's a lot of political manipulation. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of villain manipulation. There's the manipulation of heroes that were.
Yeah.
And aren't heroes anymore.
Correct.
And it's pretty much just a cool, well put together story. I mean, I can't say much because if you haven't read it, you should read it. And the ones who've read it already know what I'm talking about.
Right.
Great art. There's a lot of
fantastic art.
There's a lot of Easter eggs in this story before Easter eggs were even a hot thing. I mean, you know, just a good book to read. And a quick book to read. I mean,
it is. It's another quick read.
And I even recommend if you can find the radio show, quote unquote radio show they did. It's a book on tape, pretty much.
I didn't know that.
If you can find it, listen to it.
Oh, I can find it.
Trust me, it's out there. It's out there. I think I have it on the CD, so if I find it, I'll just burn it for you.
I mean, I found the Star Wars radio plays.
Yeah.
In HD glory.
It's even that is really like an additional like add-on to this. And the novel.
Yeah.
Because the novel tells it from the same point of view, but gives you different story things because there's no visual to the novel.
Right.
You're given more ideas of what's going on in that.
So a lot of what's being thought.
This was one where when they did like this spinoff to make more money of a novel and a, you know, a book on tape type thing, they all worked together to make the story more expansive.
Yeah. They just added to it.
Oh yeah.
They didn't bastardize it in any way. And they didn't just randomly start throwing things in there.
No,
they accentuated.
Yeah, they gave it just a little bit more where you're like, oh, I spent my money on something that was worth spending my money on.
Right.
And that. There's definitely cool moments in the book. Mm-hmm. You know, getting to see how characters evolved into the future of this idea of what the future might have been. Yeah. The Flash is literally like nonstop running all the time. When he stops, he's still moving.
Yep.
The Green Lantern is not Hal Jordan.
No, that was interesting. It was
Alan Scott.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I was gonna.
Big deal. But, Alan Scott is the Green Lantern of Earth, and he's built a castle that's, you know, protecting Earth from all the aliens that would come.
Watchtower.
Yeah, pretty much a watchtower. And that, so you know, it's cool to see him doing what he does. Oliver Queen and Dinah Lance. They have a cool little thing.
Yep.
One of our favorites, Dick Grayson, is in there.
Yep.
And his daughter.
Yeah.
Nightstar. Which, you know, there's certain elements of this book that, like, they did a spinoff miniseries called The Kingdom.
Yep.
That if it would have been done better, would have made this, like, even cooler. Yeah. Because we find out that Batman has a kid. but you don't know his kid. And, you know, eventually you figure it out, like, just because of the way that Alex painted a few right. scenes. And that, and the ending's pretty cool.
The ending is really cool. I think one of the cool
this is literally the Return of the King. It has multiple endings.
Yeah.
And every ending is like, that's cool.
That's cool.
That's cool.
That's cooler.
And then the thing was is like there was endings, and then they did the it was like a hardcover collected before Absolutes.
Yeah.
And they put another ending in there where it's just Diana, Clark, and Bruce sitting in a diner talking. Mm-hmm. And that was a cool ending too, because that left it open for maybe a sequel.
Right.
Or maybe another story that we haven't got yet. So that's pretty much it. I can't really say much more, but this is like one of those ones where I'm like, even people who don't read comics, I'm like, you should read this. Because I have friends that are churchgoers, mm-hmm. and that I'm like, here's a comic book that actually you could enjoy. Well, because Alex's father was a pastor,
right? And so Norman's character is drawn to look like Alex's father,
yep.
which is funny because Wonder Woman and Superman and Batman are all drawn to look like Alex.
Kind of. Not so, Wonder Woman, but...
Yeah, she's got a little Alex Ross
here. I don't think so, but... he didn't really like... Batman wasn't based off of him, but Superman was.
Yeah.
Superman was also based off of Christopher Reeve in that book. Yep. Captain Marvel is based off of Sal Abinanti.
Yep.
Which, you know, he still looks like that. So, but it's cool. I mean, you get a lot of characters that you hadn't seen in years in comic books in that story.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the Creeper shows up at one point. I was like, okay, that's weird.
Dead Man.
Yep. Dead Man shows up in one of the coolest like cameos in the book.
They're going to redo this book, and they're going to make all the characters look like the Justice League from the DC universe.
I hope not.
Like the DCEU.
I hope not. So, I've been hoping for an animated movie, because I think this would be years. A good animated movie.
But they can't do it as two parts. Do it as one, like, three-hour movie.
Yeah. So. Well, they'll do it as two parts. Then.
No. See, that was like the Dark Knight. Doing the Dark Knight, splitting the Dark Knight the way they did.
You just buy them both at the same time and watch it all together.
Yeah, but you got to wait for it then.
That's what I did.
Yeah.
I didn't watch the first part until I got the second part.
Well, I had to review them for Think Hero at the time, remember?
Yeah.
So I didn't have a choice.
I don't know. I mean, I think this would be a cool...
I agree.
...one, and I think it would be cool if they got the voice actors from the book on tape to do it, because they were really good. So...
Not the DC...
If they got the Justice League Unlimited actors to do those characters, I would be okay with it. But I think this would be one where I'd rather have people who...
Yeah, I get it. Know. I have a little tangent. Do you prefer Tim Daly or George Newbern?
I don't know. It's hard because on Superman Animated Series, I prefer Tim Daly.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the Justice League George Newbern is more... Especially when he gives a speech at the end.
So I rewatched that the other day.
Yeah.
Just that clip on YouTube because it's amazing. And then I went back and I watched a couple episodes. I prefer George Newbern.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a hot take or not.
I don't know.
But like Tim Daly's running around on YouTube with like Superman shirts and stuff on. It's like, dude.
Well, he was a Superman.
Throw some love to George Newbern, man. He picked up. He took the baton that you passed to him and he ran with it.
Yeah, he did.
So. And then I always forget he was in Father of the Bride.
Yeah.
And then I watch Father of the Bride and I'm like, why is that?
That's like he's one of his only like major movie roles too. And it's like, you know, glad you were Superman.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, George.
Yeah.
So,
now, if they did an animated Kingdom Come and said we're going to use the cast of Justice League, like the ones that will show up in there because a few of them would not, then I would be fine with that.
Of the movie Justice League?
No, of the
Justice League Unlimited.
Unlimited.
Sorry.
I'm just thinking of the main characters, you know, what, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. Conroy could play Batman anywhere, so.
Yeah. He's, so.
It'd be interesting to see him play an older Batman, like not a Batman Beyond one, but an older Batman who has been beaten down and built himself back up.
So the interesting thing about that, right, is this is a little bit of a spoiler. But sure. Like Bruce Wayne walks around with an exoskeleton on.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Two-Face and Bane,
they found out who he was and destroyed the mansion.
They destroyed the mansion and they beat him half to death.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so like he had every bone in his body broken.
Yep.
And yet he's still running around.
Yeah, still like, being Batman.
Being Batman.
Being an actual scarier Batman, I think. Old man Batman's scarier than Batman.
Old man Batman is like the honey badger. Yeah. He just don't care.
Oh yeah.
So I mean literally he cares about one thing. Stopping crime.
Yeah.
So
anyway, he has to. That's why he has giant robots.
Robots. I think it's funny because Wolverine, Wonder Woman gives Superman all sorts of crap for like turning his back on humanity.
Yeah.
But didn't she go back to Themyscira?
Yeah.
Like she turned her back.
But she's still been watching and doing stuff.
Well,
but
yeah. But I mean, she hasn't been out there.
It was kind of one of those things where because he got laughed off every other.
All his
generation of superheroes, pretty much like we're like, well, if he gave up, we're giving up.
Yeah. Well,
some of them were like literally like, you know what? We're going to have a normal life now.
Well, if Superman doesn't want to do it,
Superman doesn't want to. Because it pretty much like, you know, the way that story rolled was like what happened to him happens. And around that time, Bruce is found out and, you know, everything that bad could happen to these people happens.
This is my favorite version of Wonder Woman.
Yeah?
Absolutely. Especially when she goes just like mad.
Oh, when she's got the armor on and goes straight to war.
Her whole arc of wanting to protect humanity and how she goes about it with the lens that she, how she sees the world.
Yeah.
They literally
wrote her as the warrior princess.
I think this is it's my favorite iteration of the character ever.
That makes sense, yeah.
And, you know, there's been some great iterations of her. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I just feel like Mark Waid understood who she was, what her mission was, and how she would react to the situation at hand and nailed it.
Yeah, because she was there to protect men and women.
Man.
Yeah, the mankind, humankind. She was there to protect them, and all of a sudden everybody else is like, kids are running loose, running wild, and it's like she pretty much is like the school teacher that's going to come in and just teach them all.
Yeah,
this is how you're supposed to do it. And some of them, when they meet her, and that's the cool thing in this book, some of those kids who are just like, you know, pretty much total assholes, when they meet her and Superman,
right?
Some of them just go, "You got my attention."
Yeah,
it's like, and they literally join Superman's camp.
Yep,
and you know, some of them meet Batman, and they're like, you got my attention.
Whether I want to give it to you or not, you have my attention because I'm terrified.
Yeah, literally, he'll throw a batarang across the room and get everybody's attention.
Yeah.
And but it's there's cool, like, the idea of a bar where they just all go hang out. And, you know, the idea of the restaurant that's like Planet Krypton. This is the restaurant, like Hard Rock Cafe, and there's, you know, people dressed up in the 60s style.
What
costumes.
Was that, Planet Krypton? That's what you said.
Yeah,
right?
Planet Krypton. Yeah.
And I like how they're.
And why DC hasn't, like, Warner Brothers hasn't jumped on that as a real idea at this point?
I don't know. Like, that would be cool, something out in LA.
Yeah.
Just like.
And Disney just can't do it because of their contractual
right.
obligations. Well, at least in Florida, they could do a restaurant in Disneyland now, and I'm surprised they haven't. So we'll see.
I mean, they're open at Star Wars Land soon, so I'm guessing we're.
They have nowhere to go at this
blue
point.
Blue milk.
Oh, you're getting blue milk. They promise that.
So, blue milk ice cream.
But I just would. It would be cool to see, like, you know, the stuff that DC's produced, like costumes, and that in cases in a restaurant. You know, would be kind of cool.
That would be really
and
neat.
See this waiters running around in superhero costumes.
Yeah, I love how they're dressed up as them and don't
yeah
know
like
anything
the one
about.
gets his character totally wrong. I think he's Green Lantern and he like calls himself something else and the power base is wrong and everything, and it's like that would be like how it really
that's
be
how,
yeah
that's how it would happen. So the other thing is Lex Luthor in this is great.
Oh yeah, all the villains in this are kind of cool because they're so submissive to what's going on because they haven't had anybody really fight in a while.
Right. They've just been sitting back like
so
watching popcorn, watching
the
world burn.
So as Superman shows up, they're all like, whoop, wait, we got to get the band back together.
What? The Legion of Doom.
The Legion of Doom, yeah.
Captain Marvel's cool in this.
Yeah, Captain Marvel has a cool story point in this. And I'm not going to say anything else about
that. I will say there's a reason we're not mentioning the Joker.
Yeah.
Which is really cool as well.
The flashback is done really well. And Superman with the ponytail is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's like he got his Nightwing on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, all right, man. So I think that's why you guys should go check out.
We obviously like books from the late 90s, early 2000s.
Well, you know, it was a solid era. Like, we'd gotten past the pouches at that point.
Yeah.
We got into some really good storytelling.
I think, though, with Image and Valiant doing what they did in the early 90s, it gave other companies an opportunity to say, wait a minute. You know, we did. And it's the thing where Image and Valiant were inspired by DC's and Marvel's 80s stuff.
Right.
And I think that they inspired DC and Marvel's 90s, like late 90s major stories.
Absolutely. And you know, both books we picked are they're dark.
They get dark. Books, yeah, they get dark.
But at no point are they like Frank Miller Dark Knight Returns dark. Yeah. Right? And they're not dark. Neither one are dark for the sake of being dark.
I always picked a dark book, but it was also a 90s book.
Yeah. There's a cut,
but like, it's one I don't think you've ever read either. So,
well, you'll have to tell me off air. But we're gonna do more of these. This is fun. Like I had a good time like rereading this and revisiting it. And I actually almost picked a DC book for this.
Yeah,
and I think you could probably guess.
I almost picked a different DC book too.
It's a run I'm very like fond of. So
You can tell me after.
I'll tell you afterwards. Yeah. Anywho. So let us know what you guys, if you've read these books, what do you guys think?
Or if you read them, let us know what
actually you better yet, like go to the site and sign up for Comixology. Another shameless plug there. Check them out and let us know what you think. I believe DC's on there now. I don't know if Kingdom Come is or not.
It probably is.
But you can buy it on Comixology and it is well worth owning.
Yeah.
So, all right. Anything else?
No, that's pretty much it.
Awesome. Cyclops is back from the dead. On that note,
and nobody cares.
Dude, did you read you got to check it out. I'll let you look at it. It was so good. No, the Uncanny X-Men Annual number 1.
Oh, okay.
Was so good. Like this is like volume 7. So, all right, on that note, we will be back next week. Talk to you later.
Yep. Bye.
The Infest Podcast is recorded in Kings Mills, Ohio, just north of Cincinnati. You can find new episodes every Sunday on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, our website, or anywhere podcasts are downloaded. The show is hosted by Johnny Podorf and me, Brian Tudor. You can find more information about the show online at infamouspodcast.com or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as at Infamous Podcast to stay up to date on the latest news about the show and what's going on in the world of comics, movies, TV, and more. We also have a Patreon page, patreon.com/infamouspodcast. We have some great rewards for our patrons, and we're looking for help to grow the show to bring you more of the content you want to hear. You can find Johnny online at Johnny Podorf, and I'm on most social networks as at Brian Tudor. Music in this episode was provided by Michael Henry from meetmichaelhenry.com. So, whenever you're listening to us, have a great day, night, evening, weekend, whenever it is, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Later.